everyone. Welcome to Rowdy Alternative Podcast. This is Sam. We're with Chan Kinchlow, Blues Traveler, and also War Horse, which we're going to talk about here a little later on. We just had a pretty funny technical difficulty. I don't know what it looks like on your screen there, Chan, but I'm looking at the new screen of you, which is clear as day, and the old one has your face as well that's staring directly into my soul like it's frozen, which is hilarious. So that's going to be funny to...
This was all my fault. I fucked up my mom's Wi-Fi.
That's all right. We'll roll with it. We're going to go with it. So I guess we'll start out with, man, what have you been up to now these days? I know your War Horse record came out. That's been a little while, I believe November. But you've been keeping busy. What you been up to?
Well, we were, as usual, I've got a lot of frying pans. My main frying pan, of course, is my main meal is Blues Traveler, which mm-hmm. is going great. We did a, you know, summer in the fall. We're pretty busy with that. But my kids are grown up, and so Mr. Mom's not working anymore, and I quit partying, so I had a lot of free time. So I figured I was thinking about what I like to do as a hobby, and I realized I like to play guitar. So I figured for my hobby, I might try that. I'll be honest, with such an incredible singer like John, obviously I'm leaving the singing duties to him. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy singing, and it's something I wanted to kind of work on. So in Los Angeles and in the Southern California, there's kind of endless great musicians, great places to play. So I've really just been diving into that between my side band, War Horse, W4RHORS3. And then a lot of acoustic stuff, too, which I really enjoy and, you know, really makes me focus on my singing. And I can endlessly kill time working on songwriting, figuring out Elliott Smith songs, practicing. I just got done rehearsing with this pedal steel woman who plays pedal steel that's going to be playing the acoustic show with me this weekend in at the Tuning Fork in Los Angeles on March 8th.
That's and right.
Got to keep hyping.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
But I do love music, and so that's how I like to spend as much time as possible. And I'm, you know, really grateful I have a great band like Blues Traveler that allows me some free time to work on my side projects. But Blues Traveler's still a fantastic experience and still going strong. I mean, I think we'll probably get along and as functional a crew as we've been ever.
That's awesome. And I do want to talk a lot about your solo stuff, your other projects, but I do have a few Blues Traveler questions though, that I'm going to try not to ask too many that you've heard before. But so just when Blues Traveler for me has been in my life, my whole life, on the radio, growing up, all that. I wasn't really of age at the time when, like, you guys first started and you guys really hit first, you know? So I always think it's really fascinating with musicians of any area, any region in the country. When you guys first started getting going as a group, what was the scene like the music scene around you? Not necessarily, like, it could be like what inspired you, I guess, but that's a little too much of a blanket question, but more of like around you at the time. What was the music scene like?
I mean, I find it fascinating because I have a son who's 21 and a son who's 28. So I'm keep in touch with what things are like now. And then trying to kind of get my side projects off the ground, I'm kind of immersed in the scene. And it was, it's fascinating to me how different it was back in the late 80s mm-hmm. when we were a high school band. We got together in Princeton, New Jersey in 86, 87, and then moved to New York in 87, New York City. And so there's no internet. There's no no way for you to hear music from any unless you go see it live or crappy cassette tapes, which definitely... Trading those cassette tapes around colleges definitely had a big, made a big connection with a lot of those college kids who were our same age. But, you know, we had to like go out in the corner with flyers and figure out ways to get people to our shows. But back then, going out to see your friends, and you know, it was so funny because you could barely even get in touch with someone on the phone. So like when the phone rang, you picked it up because that was hot to talk to somebody. And then you make plans for like a week away. You'd be like, "We'll meet at this bar around 7 next week on Tuesday," and you'd be like, "Bet, see you there." And then you just go, and the person would show up because you said, I mean, that was the way we did it back then. There was no flaking. There was no like last minute, like, "Oh, something came up." I don't know how we dated or managed or remembered. You know, we had little address books, like little notebooks with like who's playing where, when. We lived on the paper, like the back of the Village Voice. The New York, famous New York paper had all the listings of who's playing where. And so that's how we got all our information. And yeah, if you did like an article or any kind of press, that was how everyone got all their information about new bands and what's coming up and your cool, you know, the Village Voice would always have cool stuff, but a lot of fanzines and things like that. And then word of mouth was everything. So, but as a result, everyone kind of grew up in their own little sealed hermetic chamber and kind of with their own influences. So once we started touring, we'd come to other cities and they'd have their own little scene that was kind of closed off from the rest of the world. So I do think that music that came out in the late 80s, early 90s, kind of developed in each little area kind of on its own.
Yep.
So it was just a very different vibe. And I miss it. And, you know, I love a lot of the things about now. I mean, I get exposed to so much cool, niche-y, fascinating music. And I think that side of it is really cool right now. And I mean, I'm a huge music fan, so I'm always discovering new cool artists.
Yeah, and like back then, I mean, it's easy to look at a band like Blues Traveler now in 2025 and say, yeah, they stand out. Just like, you know, a lot of bands who have had the longevity like that, they stand out. But back then, like when you compare it to now with we have the TikTok, we have social media, everything like that, it is pretty easy to find, you know, a group that you specifically want to find. You just type in some hashtags or something. So back then, how did you go about making your group stand out, I guess, when you were just still up and coming?
Well, our whole deal was our first love was we loved playing live and improvising live. That was our whole jam. And we grew up as a lot of bands, especially, you know, the jam bands is like a whole genre now. But really what it was, and at the time, it was like us, Widespread, Fish, Spin Doctors, Aquarium Rescue Unit, and then there were some other ones, God Street Wine, New Potato Caboose, so, you know, there was that kind of dead. But we grew up on, like, the Allman Brothers, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Pink Floyd. That was classic rock radio was everything back then, so... And then all the bootlegs, the live bootlegs. And we noticed that live, those guys would just jam out. And we love that side of things. We love jazz, bebop jazz, all that stuff. So for us, playing live was kind of the cornerstone of what we wanted to do. So we could find any gig, any bar, any dive, any, town, little city fair, any backyard keg party, anywhere we could to play live. And that's kind of really where we kind of got our reputation, even in high school, just playing around our little town of Princeton. We do all the keg parties. So we were, and then New York, we just played 6-7 nights a week in little dive bars all around New York for like $50.
Yeah.
And then also we put out flyers. We gave away free drugs. So if you want to, our first big gigs, we gave away free nitrous tanks, tea, free joint, dollar draft, and we put that right on the flyers, handed them out at NYU and the New School and up at Columbia. And so those were our first crowds. So if you want to know how to do it, kids, give away free drugs.
Absolutely. It works. But the whole jam band thing is interesting. It seems almost more like it's a genre, I guess, nowadays, but it seems also like as much of a, it's like a culture, I guess. The fan base is extremely loyal, but there's a culture around it. It's the sharing bootlegs, all that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the case back then. And I think the culture's kind of drifted more towards a kind of a Grateful Dead style, which is great. It was never, we weren't really ever like a huge Grateful Dead fans and went to dozens of shows. But our playing wise, we were more, I guess, in the Led Zeppelin school, kind of more blues rock.
Yeah.
And so the jam, we back then, it was just improv, you know, do you do improvisation and stretch things out? Of course, and there wasn't a term jam band. It was, I think, they called us neo hippies back then.
Oh.
Jam band came along in the late 90s. So. There's definitely a culture built around it, and some of it was the Grateful Dead. With Jerry's passing, that culture kind of moved on to some other bands that were more in that school. But to me, jam bands just it's anyone who's taking kind of is doing a lot of improvising, and the songs are loose like that. That's what it is to me. But definitely, there's a culture that's grown up around it, and like most things with Blues Traveler, we're not one thing, so sometimes we don't fit anywhere, and sometimes we fit everywhere, and that's kind of always been our MO, and, you know, can't fight it. Can't fight the funk.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is hard to place Blues Traveler into a category, and I think, and it's funny, because, like, nowadays, like, that hardly matters, I feel like. You look at all these crossover artists going into different genres, it's like, there's so many different subgenres now, and different, like, they're just dipping their toes into all these different things. And Blues Traveler, I think, was ahead of the game when you could just, like, it's Blues Traveler. Like, that's all it is. Like,
I mean, in the end, that's really what a band needs to be. You just need to be singular, complete, try and be yourself as much as possible. Make music you think's cool. And then if you think it's cool, some other people probably will. Trying to cater to a certain subset or be a certain thing, I definitely don't think it lasts as long, you know?
Right. And kind of going off that, since obviously as a part of that 90s, you know, music scene that you guys were in, whenever I listen to 90s music, I'll just say like rock, I guess rock, alternative rock, whatever. It has a certain sound to it that you would... It's not dated. That's not what I'm saying, but it has that sound to it. Do you notice that at all? Like when you hear a 90s song, like, you know, it's from a 90s, it might be nostalgia. It might be all these different factors.
Since it is what it is. Back then in the 90s, we recorded everything to tape in the studio. All those things were recorded to tape as opposed to digitally to Pro Tools, which kind of came in around 2000. So we'd have to get strong takes because you could take part, you could fix a few things, but you couldn't take a whole parts and put them all together and then go fix this. And
right.
So now everything's done digitally, which gives you a lot of flexibility. It also means it's not as expensive. There's a lot of good sides to it, but all those bands back then, you'd have to get a good band takedown for the most part, if you're in a band or that type of music. And that's kind of got that. And a lot of times we didn't even record the click. So it just has this kind of organic feel. And it also, I think, makes it sound pretty unique, like each band, because there's so much personality in getting takes like that. The simple reason that... you know, and I mean, it was even more messy back in the 80s, 70s rock, like all that classic 70s rock. That stuff is messy as can be. And that's
Zeppelin.
Still had some of that in the 90s before it became digital. And, you know, it's why some bands try and get that kind of sound back by going back to tape. But it's expensive and it takes a long time. And you really need to be tight with your arrangements, and, you know, there's a lot of pre-production, there's a lot that goes into recording that way, but I think that has a lot to do with the sound of that era.
Yeah, for sure. And I've noticed, and I don't know if you ever listened to any of this stuff or not, but like nowadays there's a wave of these groups, these rock bands that sound like they're just plucked right out of the 70s or the 80s, or like, I think like Dirty Honey or the Retrograde. There's bands like that. It's it's a really cool old school sound. And I don't know like the recording method they use, but
back to doing it on tape. That's the trick. Like if you see like Rumors, the famous Fleetwood Mac record,
mm-hmm.
they would go in and splice you have a 2-inch tape is what they recorded it all in. They would wed two takes together. They'd have to slice individual pieces of tape and then glue them underneath. And so the whole, when it's going through, there's just these piles of tape all over. And that, with they do it with razors, and that's just massively time consuming.
Man, I heard about that recently, actually, that they even did that back then.
Yeah.
And like, that just seems insanely insanely hard, I guess, to put it simply. Like, I don't know how they
would
even.
There was a lot more downtime while we let the techs like get things organized, and then it'd be like, all right, it's time to get a take. And it would be like a big deal. We'd have to knock out like 8. And, you know, sometimes it would go quicker than that. But and then it'd be back to downtime while they're getting tape organized, and be like, we don't have enough time left on this. We got to take it off, put another roll up. So, and we were doing this all in studios for the most part, because that's what you needed. There was doing like at home, you know, the 4-track only kind of became a thing in the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, we were all in, it's another part of the 90s music was, it was all done in studios. Whereas now you can set up a little recording rig almost anywhere and get a pretty good product. So in some ways, that's a really cool thing. But I mean, if we're talking about where that sound comes from, there's a lot of professionals, you're in a professional space, and you're, you know, you're doing full takes as a band, or at least, you know, the basic track as a band before you build on it.
Right. Do you do any recording work yourself then?
I do. I do a lot around Los Angeles. And it's a lot easier now. I mean, I did the Warhorse record for just a couple friends' studios. We would just knock a few takes down. I mean, we did it. It's a jam rock band, Warhorse.
Mm.
So we would play songs live a few times and it's all professional, like serious musicians. So we knew how to get pretty good takes. But it was not that expensive, and any mistakes or anything, we tried to keep it pretty live and as is. But it's pretty easy to fix and go over and change things around now. And I did it pretty inexpensively, whereas mm-hmm. back in the 90s, you needed money to record a record.
Yeah.
You needed a record company. Really.
Right. Well, let's talk a bit about Warhorse then, man. So I guess just to start out, if you want to explain how you got the band together, how that all panned out.
Well, like most things that happened, that was all COVID.
Mm.
No. So because in Los Angeles, you know, I've been wanting to do some side projects. And in Los Angeles, it's just loaded with amazing musicians who are friends of mine. So we were just, you know, coming out of COVID at late 2020, we just wanted to get out and do some playing. And it was, so I called up a couple buddies, we got together and it started going so well. And then the main thing was, is we were thinking of getting a lead singer. And then, you know, I'd written a bunch of songs where I was just singing kind of the rough out the parts. And then I realized I really enjoyed it. And I also realized I didn't want to deal with another lead singer in my life. One's plenty. So I'm like, F it, I'm going to be the lead singer.
Right.
And so it kind of grew from there, and it's kind of a it's got a main 3 people, but then it's got a loose confederation of other people that come in and sit in with us. Because there's so many great players in LA. So it's kind of like a collective with the 3 people that run it. And then you know, honestly, as of late, I've been really just loving like playing acoustic shows with a few friends here and there and pursuing that, cuz it's so quiet, and I don't know, the hassle of a band. It's kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
And all, I just awesome. Show up with an acoustic guitar and I'm ready to go.
Yeah. It's a big difference. Yeah. It's a big difference,
man. I call that thing Chan Gang.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, who's all involved in that?
Me and whoever I can get to come and help out at the shows.
Perfect. Perfect, man.
Whoever I can get in the cavalcade.
Awesome. But yeah, but I listened to the record, man. And the horse they rode in on, and it is, I didn't know what to expect, but it was such a cool sound. It's like, I can't even put a, like, it's hard to describe, really, you know what I mean? Cool. Kind of like, how would you describe it, I guess?
Well, it's a jam rock record. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really want to do it with too many of the old, with like organ and I wanted to kind of sound like, sound a little different than like what jam bands normally sound like, though it's very jammy. So that's where we are. Max playing a lot of cool like keyboard sounds.
Yeah.
Kind of adds its own flavor to it. I'm fascinated by, basically, I'm sick of organ. I'm sick of harmonica. So I wanted some different tones. And that's what we got. I mean, it just kind of came together of its own speed, own impetus. We didn't really, it's a pretty organic thing how it evolved. And I tried to stay out of the way, mm-hmm. but it came out better than I expected. And it's cool. And the most importantly, it's Dayglo vinyl. And I grew up on vinyl, like all those old 50 somethings. And one of my favorite vinyls was, I was a huge Police fan.
Okay.
And Stuart Copeland had a side project called Clark Kent.
Oh.
And I grew up in Princeton, New Jersey. There was a great like import record store, and I got this Clark Kent record, and it was Dayglo green vinyl, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And so fast forward 40 years later, I've got a Dayglo green vinyl record. So mission accomplished.
That's awesome. I haven't heard of Clark Kent. Stuart Copeland's an absolute animal.
That's some deep Police lore. So yeah, Stuart Copeland's side project, probably early Police days, and it was called Clark Kent.
Yeah,
check it out, kids.
I will have to check that out for sure. But I mean, like your record, it's like space, has a cool spacey feel, if that makes
sense. We found that too, and that kind of that's where the robot and all that space imagery came from. But yeah, I mean, you just try and kind of go with the creative flow, and sometimes visuals and atmosphere kind of find you, and we just kind of incorporate that. I'm not sure. It wasn't a conscious decision, but it just happened.
Yeah. Is there any kind of like story or any kind of theme behind the album that you wanted to like convey?
Well, Warhorse is a green robot.
Okay.
That's like its serial number.
All right.
Honestly, none of the people involved in this were high when we came up with it, though it sounds like it. And he's like a rogue robot that's kind of lost in space.
Okay.
And he's trying to, he's following, you know, music waves to get back home. And that's kind of the weird concept we have around it and where the space thing kind of came from. You know, I guess it's kind of fun to have a theme and a story. You know, a lot of cool bands had these kind of theme albums. And so we just kind of, I mean, it's not a concept record, but it's cool to have some kind of symbology behind the whole thing. We get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Yeah. It's a fun listen too. Like anyway.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks,
like,
man. Thank
yeah,
you.
Man. And, yeah. So like, do you have any other things like on the table for Warhorse or is this,
yeah,
like
well,
what
Warhorse
you...
we'll get, we're going to pick up some live gigs, this spring. Right now I've got a couple of these Chan Gang things, which is, with some of the guys from Warhorse, I get dragged down there. There's Pedal Steel woman, Andrea Witt plays Pedal Steel. And, so that's this coming Saturday, March 8th in Los Angeles. And we'll have some more of those and some Warhorse gigs and then gear up for, you know, May into June with Blues Traveler. And we're touring with, us, the Gin Blossoms and the Spin Doctors, three fantastic 90s bands with massive hits.
That'll be a blast.
That should be a fun summer.
For sure. And before we head out, man, and by the way, thanks so much for hopping on. This is a lot
of fun getting to talk to you. Great.
Yeah, and it's only March, so I feel like I could still ask this question. So for the year 2025, it sounds like you are beyond busy, and it sounds like it's a lot of great shit coming up.
I don't work that hard. I just like playing music.
Right on. But is there any goal or anything, like off the top of your head, like specifically that you want to accomplish or be able to do this year for any of those projects?
Well, I like to think I'm doing it. Honestly, my biggest challenge right now, there's something, it comes along, but it's just continue working on my singing. That's something that, you know, because guitar and songwriting and all that is something I'm pretty, is in a comfort zone, but it's good to get out of your comfort zone. And, and I love challenging myself like that, putting myself in positions where I have to sing my way out. So that's what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah. Right. So how are you, like, are you taking lessons? Is it all yourself?
Take lessons. I practice my vocalizations. I figure out tons of songs by other artists, you know. It's like anything, you got to put your 1,000 hours in to get competent at it. So
yeah,
I'm writing 100 songs where I'm singing, because a lot of the times I'd write music and occasionally words for John, but I write a lot of music. I'm figuring out 100 songs from other artists, and I'm doing my vocals and lessons. And then I guess I got to get 100 gigs where I'm the lead singer. So I'm at like 20. So I'm slowly but surely I'm getting there. And then you know what? Then I might be all right at singing. But I'm in this weird position where I'm like a really pretty good guitar player with a lot of experience. But so I'm enough of a musician to know the singing's getting better, but it still sucks.
Oh, but like the thing is, at least you're doing it. It's admirable that you look at like a lot of these groups that have been like anyone from these bands that have been around, you know, like since the 90s or 2000, whatever. And they want to still be able to do fresh stuff. It's not just play the hits. It's like you got to keep doing it.
You do. You got to keep trying. You got to keep making yourself a little uncomfortable to grow. So I'll keep trying to do that. And main thing is it's just fun.
For sure. And that's awesome, man. Thanks a lot for hopping on. But before we head out, just so people could know where to find you, any shows, I know you mentioned you're cooking up stuff with Warhorse, Chan Gang, all that stuff. If you have anything you want to throw out there.
Check it out on IG under Chan Kinsla, my Warhorse and Blues Traveler connect through there. But we do a lot of stuff on Instagram. So check it out on the IG, Blues Traveler, Chan Kinsla, or Warhorse, W4RHORS.
Right on. You guys make sure to do that. It's really good shit. I promise. It's really good. And
thanks,
yeah. And also check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials. Google us, you'll find us. So thanks a lot, Chan. Thanks a lot, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. My boots look good on your bed. And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? 'Cause baby, I'm